From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN.
Yeah, thanks very much, Ollie. It's been a beautiful afternoon here in Salford in Greater Manchester. It's been lovely. Absolutely glorious. The sun has been shining, the rain went away. And that's nice. Nice change. It is Tuesday. It is October 8th, 2019. This is your Richie Allen Show. Two terrific guests for you today. And I look forward to your participation on Twitter as usual. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. That's how you reach me. And I look forward to reading your tweets today.
Well, wing out the gimp.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
What the bloody hell is going on with vaping? E-cigarettes vaping. We were told that vaping was a great way to get off of cigarettes and to avoid all the carcinogens, the carcinogenic chemicals in cigarettes. Now we're being told that vaping is doing terrible things to your lungs. It's killing people. You can get cancer from it. The side effects are terrible. This is a big thing. It's been going on for a couple of weeks now. Michigan in the US. It's come here to the UK as well. What's going on with vaping? Well, the co-founder of LiveLeak.com, one of the biggest websites and most important in the world, Hayden Hewitt, joins the program in the second hour to look behind this story. What's really going on? Hayden Hewitt, top man. TriggerWarning.tv as well. Trigger Warning on YouTube. We'll get into that with him in the second hour. And before that then, is Donald Trump really withdrawing from Syria, really? Of course he isn't. The great Stephen Lendman joins us live from Chicago to analyse this story. What is Turkey going to do? What's it going to mean for the Kurds? And what is it going to mean for all of those terrorists who are imprisoned in northern Syria? Another massive story. We'll look at it in a way that nobody else does. This is your Richie Allen Show. It is Europe's most listened to independent radio show. I'm your host. Welcome to the program. Marvellous. Yeah. Lovely stuff. Oh, it's great when the weather is like this. It gives you a bit of a fillip, a bit of a boost or a bit of a lift, doesn't it? Yeah, it's lovely. Because it rained dats and cogs earlier on. I didn't get as many wettings today as I normally get. I normally get about 5 soakings. It's not a good day if I don't get absolutely drenched into the skin about 5 times. Oh, it's a lovely thing when you have a dog. Going outdoors several times a day, coming back and drying off and cleaning your dog. Sure, you never get tired of it, do you? Motherfucking dogs! Oh, I said to Jazz this afternoon, I said, Jazz, I don't have to clean you. Isn't that lovely? There you go. Now, you heard Ollie Barrett there on the Nuacht. The Nuacht is the Irish word for news. Nuacht. All right, there's a little bit of education for you. You learn something new today. Diagwit is hello. Nuacht is news. And Taoiseach means fucking dickhead, is what Taoiseach means. Anyway, I couldn't resist it. A number 10 source, somebody in Downing Street, said that Boris Johnson had a phone call with Angela Merkel, the German Chancellor, and that basically, they concluded with the realisation that a deal is essentially impossible. No deal is possible. There's no common ground between the UK and the European Union. They spoke about the proposals Merkel and Johnson did, about his proposals, the ones he put forward to the EU. But the number 10 source said she made it clear a deal was overwhelmingly unlikely. Ah, there's been re-raw August rulia-boolia. That means commotion. That's the Irish phrase for commotion. Commotion there is. The President of the European Council, Donald Tusk, sent a very aggressive public tweet to Boris Johnson, writing, "What's at stake is not winning some stupid blame game. At stake is the future of Europe and the UK, as well as the security and interests of our people." Now, Michael Gove is the Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster. What a load of balls that is, eh? The Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster. Anyway, he's in charge of no-deal prepping, and he addressed the House of Commons this afternoon to talk about no-deal prepping. And you should hear him right now. Oh, Jesus. If you weren't messing, Alan, with your stupid tomfoolery, you'd be able to play the clip. Here is the Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster.
We've put forward a fair and reasonable compromise for all sides that respects the historic referendum result, and we hope that the EU will engage with us seriously. And in setting out these proposals, we've moved. It is now time for the EU to move too. If it does, then there is still every chance that we can leave with a new deal. However, if the EU does not move, this government is prepared to leave without a deal on the 31st.
Well, short and sweet. Well, he's been there all afternoon. So Keir Starmer is the Shadow Brexit Secretary, Labour MP. What did he say?
They put proposals on the table that had massive gaps in them. Really simple questions. If you're going to have the whole of the United Kingdom outside of the customs union, you need customs checks. And the government knows that, and it knew that when it put the proposals forward. Instead of the EU then probed this and says, well, how's this going to work? Instead of adjusting the position and answering those questions, they collapsed the talks 6 days after they put proposals on the table. The only conclusion is that the government put forward proposals which were designed to fail.
They put proposals that were designed to fail, adds Keir Starmer. Maybe they did, maybe they didn't. Let's check in with Lewis Goodall. Lewis Goodall is a Sky News reporter. Actually, before we do that, let me bring you up to speed, just to give you a recap. So Angela Merkel tells Johnson that the Brexit deal proposed by him is overwhelmingly unlikely to succeed. Okay? The Germans, they won't comment on this. They've said no comment. Nein. The Labour Party, as you heard there, have accused Johnson of cynicism and attempting to sabotage negotiations. Donald Tusk, the European Commission President, has accused Johnson of a stupid blame game. And today is Parliament's last working day before a 5-day prorogation begins. Why? Because the Queen is going to give a speech and she's going to, well, lay out before the nation the government's plans for the future. So here is Sky News, Lewis Goodall. He's a reporter for Sky. This is his analysis, and it is very, very good, at least in my opinion. Lewis Goodall.
Well, indeed, we've had a most peculiar set of exchanges in the House of Commons just now, where Michael Gove, who is delivering an update on the government's no-deal Brexit preparations, delivering that statement at the very same time that you have MPs on the other side of the Commons saying, well, we're not going to have a no-deal. We've effectively outlawed it under the Bent Act. We've seen the Conservative Party tweeting out tweets today saying we will be leaving on October 31st. It's still what the Prime Minister says. We see briefing from Downing Street saying that that's what they're going to do come what may. Yet this all seems, as the MP Hilary Benn said, to be on something of a parallel reality. Because unless a deal can be secured, which it looks like it won't be, then according to the stipulations of the Bent Act, we are going to have to extend. And whatever the government says about that, I think that's where all of the debate in Westminster is now moving to. It's where all the debate, I know, in Brussels, and I'm sure Adam will talk about it more, is talking to, is what sort of extension the European Union might offer and what the politics of this country might look like during that extension. It seems to me that so much, ironically enough, of the power of what happens next to our politics in this place, in the Palace of Westminster, will reside in Brussels, in the sense if they offer a short extension, as the Bent Act stipulates, something up to the end of January, then clearly the only real way through the impasse is probably a general election. But of course there are whispers, rumours that you hear from Brussels that there are people talking about a longer extension.
Because
they don't want that rolling series of extensions happen again, and so perhaps you could have something up to June, and then a whole different series of options emerges, including potentially that of a referendum. And I know that members of the Rebel Alliance have spoken about that. What do they do? How do they respond if the European Union gives a longer extension than that is stipulated by the Bent Act? Whatever the government says now, whatever plane of reality they're operating on, I think it's fair to say that the rest of the Commons, other parties, and indeed some MPs on the government side as well, are talking about the other options, about what happens now after October the 31st, when frankly it seems highly, highly, highly unlikely, remotely unlikely, vanishingly unlikely that we will have left the European Union.
Remotely unlikely, vanishingly unlikely that we will have left the European Union. Surprise, surprise. Miss Cilla Black. Between the eyes. All together now. The unpredictable. That's the surprise you see. Surprise, surprise. Of course, we're not leaving the European Union after October 31st. I've told you that for 3 years. And Boris Johnson is no serious Brexiteer. He might want to give the impression that he is. Johnson knows that we couldn't possibly leave the European Union. We will never be allowed to. And what he's tried to do, and this was summed up brilliantly by Mail on Sunday reporter Harry Cole about 10 days ago. He wants to make it look like he's done all he can to get us out, so he'll be some hero after we haven't left and we are in a general election cycle. Johnson will then look like the hero, and that will be how he will campaign. What is... I asked Joe Pesci earlier on about Boris Johnson. I'm not going to share this with you. No, I'm not. I'm not going to do that old gag. It's dreadful, isn't it? But it was all too predictable. We're going to leave Brexit for now, by the way. You'll be glad to know. At the time coming up for 14 minutes past the hour, it is Tuesday's Richie Allen Show, and I am indeed Richie Allen. Welcome to the programme. Now, Extinction Rebellion activists who want to carry on protesting in London must go to Trafalgar Square or they will be arrested, according to the police. As the police are enforcing, or trying to, a Section 14 notice to stop serious disruption to communities after they removed those who are camped out in Westminster. They've arrested, so far, nearly 500 people. The Prime Minister has described the activists as uncooperative crusties. Yeah. And luminaries from the world of celebrity have come out to say the people that who've turned up are brilliant. They love the world. They love the planet. They love you, dear listener. They love you. And they're doing it for your children. Even Chris Packham, the TV presenter and the environmental campaigner, he said they are the concerned people of the world. It's going on all over the place. Canning them out with hoses. Hose canning them out. Water canning them out is what I would suggest. Interesting this morning on Sky, Miatta Fanbulla is the CEO of the New Economics Foundation. That's a think tank, even, by the way. That's Miatta Fanbulla, CEO of New Economics Foundation think tank, and the political editor of The Sun on Sunday, a guy called David Wooding. They were on Skype this morning together debating this. Well, they were debating religious maniacs, because that's what they are. I think you'll hear David Wooding first, and then Miatta Fanbulla. Here we go.
There's a lot of hypocrisy here, that these celebrities all fly around the world to attend these Extinction Rebellion demonstrations, which cause havoc to people's travel plans, don't advance the cause because people get cheesed off with it. And they're just jumping on a bandwagon. Let's hope it's a solar-powered bandwagon.
Well, if you think about 18 months ago, climate change was barely on people's radar.
What was that? What did she say there? What was that? She said something about 18 months ago we weren't thinking about climate change?
Well, if you think about 18 months ago, climate change was barely on people's radar. And it wasn't featuring...
Honestly, I just think that's nonsense. Well,
yes, Adam Bolton.
What about, you know, Al Gore's film, An Inconvenient Truth, earning an Oscar? No. I mean, the notion that you need people to block the roads in Westminster to tell us about climate change. Well, you know, why do we have an International Climate Change Commission at the UN? Why do we have the Paris Accords? I mean, this notion that it wasn't on the agenda is just not sustainable.
Well, so if you ask people, it wasn't polling in the top six things that people cared about. It's now polling in the top three things that people care about because there has been a focus that's been put on it. So, you know, whether we like it or not, no one's saying that we haven't been dealing with climate change. We just haven't been dealing it with the seriousness and the pace that we need to. And, you know, whether you agree with what they're doing or not, most people now recognise there's a huge threat. When you ask voters what they care about, it's in the top three issues, and that's happened in the last 18 months. So there is something about concerted effort and energy, and, you know, it's not just Extinction Rebellion. I think the youth strikers have done a phenomenal job as well, and it has raised it, and it's also mobilised a generation of young people that are like, this is our future, and we need to move, and we need to do much.
We are the world. We are the children. Why has it moved into the top three of people's priorities in 18 months? I would argue that relentless propaganda driven by the media and Hollywood is the reason. You know, people don't come to these conclusions by themselves. It's not that people are I don't know, vacuous, empty-headed consumers glued to their television screens. They're not that bad. They're not that bad, but they do not come to these opinions or conclusions of their own volition. They are propagandized. They are driven to these thoughts. They are driven to fear about the future of the environment by propaganda driven by the media and Hollywood. Anyway, this gets a little more interesting.
We see in Britain, carbon emissions have been cut by 44%.
Oh yeah, this is important. Because, all right, he works for the Sun on Sunday. It's not great, is it? But what he is about to say, David Wooding here, the political editor of the Sun on Sunday, is absolutely irrefutable, what he says.
We see in Britain, carbon emissions have been cut by 44% since 1990. We are 1.2% share of the world's pollution. I mean, there were these smogs in London years ago. The buildings were black. We've done a lot of work here. It's not Britain where we need to do it. And blocking the streets only winds people up. I spoke to a gentleman coming over here this morning who said, do you know what? I'm going to go home and I'm going to switch all my lights on and I'm going to rev my car up extra hard because these people are winding me up.
So we've done stuff but not enough, and because historically we've been one of the bigger...
We've done stuff but not enough. Love from the think tank. Love. Address the point he made at the very beginning when he said that the UK accounts for less than 1% of CO2 emissions globally. Address that point. It doesn't matter what the UK does, even if man-made CO2 was changing the climate. Doesn't matter. And the atmosphere is made up of 0.4% CO2, and 0.4% of that, hilariously, is created by man anyway. But you can't speak to these people.
Emitters, we're having to do far more. And for me, it goes back to the fact that people feel they need to block the street for them to get media coverage about
some
this.
People.
Across the, you know, Brexit is so dominated that in the end, people took drastic action and have done disruptive things just to get press coverage. And for me, that says more
about... To me, it doesn't pass the basic do as you would be done by test. Why should a minority disrupt the lives of a majority?
Yes, what a question, Adam Bolton. This question applies to every aspect of our lives.
I test. Why should a minority disrupt the lives of a majority on, let's say, a fairly extreme interpretation of the facts?
Yeah, transgender agenda people, stick that up your arses. Why should a minority, a tiny one, inflict upon a majority what they should think and what they should do? Yes, Adam Bolton, yes. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're not 100%.
The science is
they're
the science.
They're not 100%. The they're not 100%.
She's even laughing when she's saying it. This is what makes me giggle as well. I love it. She laughs when she says it.
Interpretation of the facts. I mean, they're not 100%.
The science is
they're
the science.
They're not 100%.
The science. The science is the science. Yeah, there is no fucking science.
Not 100% right on the science, and you can speak to a lot of scientists about that, and nor are they 100% honest about the consequences of ceasing to use fossil fuels within 5 years.
I don't think they're honest either about what they're actually intending to do here. There's been investigations into the people behind this, and there are Marxist organisations who want to overthrow capitalism.
Overthrow capitalism. Hey, listen, I'm no fan of capitalism. I wouldn't mind speaking to the Extinction Rebellions about overthrowing capitalism. I'm no capitalist, obviously. But yeah, he makes a good point. They're a bunch of idiots. God love them. Morons. Evangelicals. I said it this morning on the newspaper thing, didn't I? They're religious maniacs. We'll give the last word or thereabouts to the New Economics Foundation lady, Miatta Fan Bulla. She loves the old climate change evangelicals. We'll give her the final word.
So whether, you know, you can disagree or agree with their tactics, the fundamental is that we need to decarbonise at a pace that we have not quite acknowledged. And whether, you know, they talk about 2025, the science is not necessarily there. But the point is, just to mitigate, we're talking about just to keep us at 1.5 degrees, we've got to take far more radical action. We're talking about expanding Heathrow. We have a fuel duty subsidy. We are not a government. This is not a government. We're not a society that recognises the threat.
And globally, we're not going to make any difference anyway.
Yes.
Well, there has to be a global push, but every country needs to start domestically.
Of course, we all need to start domestically. And they did interview some of these uncooperative crusties today. And they've all been saying to Sky and to the BBC that it must be compulsory. No cars. A 19 degree maximum central heating plan for your home. So old people will freeze to death in the winter. You know? It has to be compulsory. It must be enforced on people. And a number of these crusties, to give Johnson his credit, these crusties today said that they invoked this idea of the war effort again. We did it in the war. We told people what to do. We've got to do it again. Anyway, before we say hi to Stephen Lendman, Donald Trump, as you know, has been threatening to destroy Turkey's economy on Twitter. I've told you why this is happening. Why we have Twitter. Why we have people conducting diplomacy on Twitter. Because it's a television. You are living in a television show. You are in a television show. You are. It is to engage you in politics. Re-engage you. Get you back interested in it again. This is why you've got diplomacy conducted through Twitter. It's utterly bizarre. I feel like Frank Grimes in The Simpsons. Frank that went to work with Homer at the nuclear power plant. And he just goes mad when one death, you know, one potentially life endangering stunt after another. One life endangering stunt after another is performed by Homer. And everybody laughs. And Frank Grimes is going mad. And I feel like that. Trump is threatening people on Twitter. You've got Donald Tusk calling Boris Johnson out on Twitter. It's for your benefit. It's to convince you that this is all serious and important and that you're involved in it. It's crazy. So Trump has been threatening Turkey, saying that if they go off limits when they invade Syria, we'll destroy you economically. Because it's been said that everybody is surprised that Donald Trump has pulled forces out of northeastern Syria. Don't be surprised, he hasn't really. Okay? So people are worried about the Kurds, what might happen to them. They're worried about the ISIS terrorists who are already imprisoned there. Trump is threatening the Turks. And Sky News had a chat with the Turkish ambassador to the UK, a guy called Unit Yalcin. Unit Yalcin was asked, what about the terrorist prisoners? What did he say?
The ideal thing here is all the countries should take their own terrorist fighters or terrorists. That is the ideal thing. Because when they were leaving their countries, they had their nationality and passports, and they became terrorists, or maybe some wives or kids are innocent, I don't know. But those countries should take those people back to their own countries, and they can bring them justice, they can send them to court, or they can rehabilitate them.
And have you spoken specifically to Britain about that?
So far, according to this possible operation, we did not talk, but we have talked this issue in the past, especially if these foreign terrorist fighters are in Turkey. They are providing consular services to them, and also according to that joint declaration of intent, if those terrorists are in Turkey, we can deport them. And also they have commitment to prevent those fighters to leave this country. I mean, we have a cooperation mechanism if those terrorists are in Turkey. I think we can be creative and we can find some new mechanisms for cooperation.
We can be creative. The thing is, countries don't want these people to come back. And I'll tell you why the United Kingdom, for example, doesn't want any of these people coming back. Because it's very embarrassing for the government. Because many of these fighters who went out to fight alongside ISIS, ones whom you didn't hear about on the Daily Mail pages or in the pages of The Sun, many of them are basically undercover intelligence agents working for MI6, working for the French intelligence agencies, working for the Germans, and working for the Americans and the Israelis. Many of ISIS's members who came from the UK and France and elsewhere are actually known to the intelligence agencies, and that's why they don't want them coming back. That's the thing that Trump supporters don't understand. ISIS exists because it was breathed life. Life was breathed into it by the US, by France, by Israel, and by the United Kingdom. That's not my opinion. That's an absolute fact. It's a shit show is what it is. And we're going to talk in a couple of minutes with Stephen Lendman, who's going to be live in Chicago to talk about this. Fantastic journalist, great writer. Check out his website. I'll be posting links to that in a minute. So then, let's welcome back to the programme Stephen Lendman. In the meantime, we'll take some music from Radiohead. Yeah, Radiohead will do. Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. The time exactly 28 minutes past the hour. Welcome to it. Tweet me. It's at Richie Allen Show. Remember, Hayden Hewitt coming up in the second hour about vaping. That's a very big story as well today. Music from Radiohead on the Richie Allen Show. Let's get into it. This is a massive story, this, and it's gotten lost here in the UK in Brexit and in other stories, other issues, climate change. It's a huge story. Is Donald Trump pulling out of Syria? Is Donald Trump, the US president, serious when he addresses the media and says, 3 years ago, I promised an end to these overseas wars, and I promised I would withdraw the troops, and we would get the United States out of these never-ending wars. Now, today, he's been threatening Turkey's economy, has Donald Trump, that if basically Turkey goes off limits when it invades northern Syria, if it attacks Kurdish fighters in doing so, Trump has been saying, we will wreck your economy. It's an extraordinary set of circumstances, this diplomacy conducted via Twitter, as I've just been talking about. His supporters are thrilled that he is honouring a pledge to withdraw from overseas never-ending wars that are draining the US economy and killing young US men and women soldiers. How serious is he? No better man to tackle this than my first guest today. He's an old friend of mine. He's been helping me out for many years on these issues. A terrific writer at stephenlendman.org. You can read him at stephenlendman.org. And he's always got brilliant articles on his website. Today he's got articles on this entitled Trump Escalated the Wars He Inherited and US Plans Permanent Occupation of Syrian Territory. I'll put links to those articles. I know many of my listeners follow Stephen Lendman anyway. Let's welcome him back, live from Chicago, our great friend Stephen Lendman. Stephen, thanks for taking the call. How are you?
Richie, I'm doing fine. It's always great to be on with you. It's certainly a prime topic to discuss what's going on with Trump's comments, the situation in Syria, whether he will or will not pull out. He certainly has not so far. I don't expect him to. That's why I titled my article, Richie, Permanent U.S. Occupation of Syria Plan. It's the same thing going on in Afghanistan, the same thing in Iraq. It's not exactly the same in Libya because U.S. troops did not invade the country, but Libya is certainly vulnerable to U.S. invasion anytime a U.S. president wants to order one. And this goes in Yemen, there are U.S. special forces on the ground. There's a U.S. war in Somalia, few people know anything about. It's a horrible situation, Richie.
Stephen, I'm going to take his side for once because I hammer him relentlessly on this program. Well, I'm going to pretend to take his side. Let's have a bit of balance here. Does he want to pull the United States out of these wars? He spoke about little else apart from Crooked Hillary. He spoke of little else but drawing US troops out of these overseas battles. Does he mean it, but are his hands tied by those above him?
His hands are definitely tied, Richie. And I think I can explain it the way Vladimir Putin once explained it. I think it was over a year ago. He said something like this. When a new U.S. president comes into office, men show up in dark suits, like the one I'm wearing, he said, with briefcases. And then my words, they explain the facts of life to the new president. This is the way the system works. This is what you'll do. And it's implied that if you don't follow the way the rules of the game, the way dark forces in America want you to, well, you may not be around very long. I would say the lesson of Jack Kennedy, assassinated on November 22nd, 1963, a day I will always remember what I was doing and where I was at the time, Richie. That lesson is remembered by all U.S. incumbents, even Trump, I think, is well aware of that lesson. You either play the game the way dark forces in America want it played, or you'll have a very, very tough time in office, and you may not last very long. He may want to pull out of Syria. He may want to get out of all these wars, but he won't do it because the U.S. system demands permanent U.S. wars.
So when he was on the campaign trail, however idiosyncratic he is, however eccentric he is, however, you know, however many foibles he has, he's a fallible dude. We're all fallible, but he's got skeletons in his closet. However weird and quirky he is, he may very well have meant it, right? But once he gets in, he's told by the neocon Zionists above him and others, listen, pal, this is the way it works. Our plan is for domination. Well, is for Israeli domination, effectively, of that region. We're going along with it, and you better toe the line. Or else, things will come out about you. Things will happen to discredit you. Is that how it goes, Stephen?
Yeah, that's exactly right, Richie. And of course, what he's done is not pull out of Syria. Whatever number of U.S. forces are in northern Syria, and I never believe the official numbers quoted, whether it's a few dozen, 100, 200, 300, could be a few thousand or more. Maybe it's many thousands. I simply don't know the number. And along with Pentagon forces, there are unknown numbers of CIA operatives, and they're most sinister of all. All Trump did was take a number of U.S. forces that are close to the Turkish border and move them back so many miles away from the border. So they were redeployed. They were not taken out of Syria. And I don't believe they will be taken out of Syria. I'm not a young kid anymore, Richie, as you know, but I doubt the U.S. will leave Syria anytime in the rest of my years. And I'm in my mid-80s.
Yeah, Stephen Lendman is our guest. Thanks, Stephen. StephenLendman.org. Read these articles. There aren't many writers like Stephen. There certainly aren't in the independent media writing about these issues. And you know what, Stephen? Even if he took the human personnel out of Syria entirely, which I agree with you, I don't believe he will do, they're using drones increasingly more often to do their damage now, countries like the United States anyway. So if he wanted to double down on this and to, you know, throw a big smokescreen at the American people, he could take every single man and woman out of the region and still continue to drop bombs on the place anyway.
Oh, we sure could, not only by drones, but U.S. warplanes. And drone war was the way the Yemen war began a few weeks after Afghanistan in 2001. The Yemen war did not begin in March 2015. It began in October 2001. Bush Cheney began it with drone war. Obama greatly escalated the Bush Cheney war, and Trump exponentially escalated Obama's war. The Bureau of Investigative Journalists said Trump escalated drone wars in Yemen sixfold. Well, the same thing is going on in Afghanistan, in Syria, maybe in Libya, in Somalia, maybe in other places. Absolutely. U.S. drone war, U.S. war by Pentagon warplanes. This will go on if all U.S. troops on the ground are brought out, and there will still be CIA operatives, probably U.S. special forces that are operating covertly, along with U.K. and French special forces. This stuff is going on, I think, in every U.S. war theater.
He dropped, I think, on average, his daily average. This is why you wrote the article about Trump escalating the wars that he was handed. Rather than pull out of them, which he said he would, he's escalated them. He has, on average, authorized the use of drone strikes even more than Obama. Is that right, Stephen?
Oh, absolutely. He's taken Obama's wars and escalated them. And you have to ignore the rhetoric of all politicians. That's my advice to everybody. Ignore what they say. Follow only what they do. So what has Trump done? He's escalated wars. He hasn't ended them. He may talk about wanting to pull out. In his heart of hearts, he may want to pull out, but he hasn't pulled out. He's escalated wars. I don't see them ending anytime as long as he's in office. And whoever succeeds him, the same dirty stuff will go on. This is the U.S. system. Gore Vidal wrote a book titled A Permanent War for Permanent Peace about the U.S. permanent war policy. Well, permanent peace, of course, is the rhetoric, but permanent war is the policy. And that's the way it's been at least since June 1950, when the U.S. aggressively attacked North Korea, not the other way around.
Not the other way around. Just before we talk about the implications of what Turkey might do, I've got to ask this. Some of Trump's supporters will probably be happy to hear that he might have been sincere in his campaigning days, but that his hands have been tied because they want to believe that he's fighting some supernatural battle against the deep state, which he isn't, of course, but they want to believe that. But I want to ask you about the emergence in the Democratic Party of people like Ilhan Omar and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, these women who've been critical of Israel, maybe mildly critical of Israeli influence, critical of wars. Is there any hope at all with this new breed of sassy, you know, social media inclined young democratic women, or would it just be the same old bloody story if they ever got within a hair's breadth of the White House?
Oh, I'd love to express a feeling of hope, Richie, but I'm afraid I can't. There have been figures like this around before. My favorite, who's also a personal friend, is Cynthia McKinney. Yeah. She contributed to one of my books. I contributed to one of hers. And once in a while, we communicate by email. Cynthia was the real thing. Whatever Omar and the others are, the four congresswomen who call themselves the squad, quote unquote, I don't know whether they're sincere 100% down the line, but there's certainly a breath of fresh air, along with Tulsi Gabbard, another breath of fresh air. But straight down the line, Cynthia McKinney was the real McCoy all the way. I met her one time when she was Green Party presidential candidate in 2008. I met her in August. They had the convention at a downtown hotel, and I went to the convention, and by luck, I just happened to run into her. I only spent about a minute with her, just exchanging a few comments, but she is the real deal. If she became president, she would have gone all out to do the right thing, but they would have done her in. So for her sake, she's alive, she's well, hope she's prospering. Had she become president, which she didn't have a chance to be, she probably wouldn't be around today. But there aren't many like Cynthia McKinney.
There are not. One of the greatest people I've ever interviewed, Cynthia. I remember that incredible conversation we had years ago, and it's one of the interviews that I did that got most views on YouTube later on, when she talked about the pledge. You know all about this, Stephen. Cynthia was only in her office in Washington when she was first voted in as a congresswoman for Georgia, I believe. She was only just in the bloody door. She hadn't even put her coat on the coat stand. And they were coming in, the lobbyists, saying, you've got to sign the pledge, the pledge, the pledge. Basically, it was Israeli lobbyists saying, you won't do very well in this town unless you sign the pledge. No, she's a terrific lady, Cynthia McKinney. Just before we talk about Trump and impeachment, let me remind our listeners, Stephen Lendman is our guest. There aren't very many people like this man left around today. StephenLendman.org. His writing is absolutely on point and sharp. Go to his website, StephenLendman.org. Read about what's happening every single day. I'm delighted you're doing it, Stephen. Before we talk about the impeachment, what about Turkey and their, you know, their plans for Syria and the ISIS prisoners that are there already? What the Syrian government might do? Could this invasion, as it were, by the Turks, could this lead to something very, very serious? Could we see, I don't know, I don't want to sound stupid, but could there be some sort of conflict between the Turks and the Syrian government themselves?
Well, anything is possible, but of course, Turkey is a NATO member. Force strength-wise, it's the second largest Turkey NATO member in terms of number of troops. It's the most important NATO member in the Middle East, and yet there's been great friction between the U.S. and Turkey for a number of reasons, at least back to 2016, probably before that, but in 2016 in the summer, I believe July, there was a coup to oust President Erdogan from office, and I believe U.S. dirty hands were all over that, and I think he knows about it. He bought Russian S-400 air defense systems. Sanctions were threatened against him. He was pulled off the F-35 program. He refuses to observe the U.S. sanctions on Iran. He's buying Iranian oil and gas. He basically told the U.S. to go to hell on that issue. He's coming to Washington, I think later in October. I don't know. I forget the dates. But he's coming in to meet with Trump. We'll see what happens. He's a tough guy. He's a tyrant. I have no sympathy for him whatsoever, except that he's very critical of Israel. And he's going his own way increasingly in terms of relationships with the U.S., away from U.S. hegemonic aims. So I certainly support him on that. his interest in Syria has got nothing to do with a safe zone, nothing to do with Syrian refugees, nothing to do with wanting peace in the region. It has everything to do with wanting to annex northern Syrian territory, especially its oil-producing areas. And he has the same objective for northern Iraq, which has much, infinitely more oil than Syria. Syria has small amounts of oil. Iraq has the fifth largest oil reserves. Iran the fourth largest. He really wants to get his hands on some of those Iranian oil reserves. So he just bombed the Kurdish areas in northern Syria a day or two ago. Press TV reported that he was shelling cross-border in northern Syria. At Press TV reported it, I imagine it's true. He'll probably invade. There'll probably be a conflict with the Kurds. To what extent it will go, I don't know. And whether it will result in confrontation with the U.S., I don't know. I don't think either country wants that, Richie. Yeah. So there's a good chance it won't happen. Maybe he'll do enough of what he wants to do to show he'll back up his word with action and then pull out and stop. But he'll come back again. He's been in Syria before. Two previous offenses in Syria. This will be the third one. As long as the Syria war goes on, there'll probably be more. He will not give up his objective to annex northern Syrian territory. But make no mistake, he doesn't give a damn about the refugees.
No, he doesn't. And that's why I said my question might have sounded stupid. Because Erdogan is buying oil from Iran directly flouting the U.S. economic sanctions, because he's not doing what the United States want. You know, you could, for the uneducated, you might think that the Turks and the Syrians might be, you know, natural bedfellows, friends. But because of the oil, that's why I asked the question about Syria defending that territory and maybe clashing with Turkish troops. It might have sounded like a stupid question, but it's not beyond the bounds of possibility. And didn't Erdogan get caught red-handed by RT journalists buying oil from ISIS several years ago? Isn't that right?
Oh, he sure did. It's been a long time, but I wrote about that.
You wrote about it. It's you that told me about it, in fact, Stephen. It was you. Yeah, it was you who told me. And you were on RT and you were on Press TV talking about it. It's because of you that I knew about that. That's right. So maybe it could escalate into something between Syria and Turkey, or maybe I'm just talking nonsense.
Oh, it could. It could. It could escalate between something between Turkey and the U.S. I think if that happened, Richie, it wouldn't last very long and it wouldn't be too serious. The U.S. absolutely does not want to get into a shooting war with Turkey. But look what might happen with the Kurds. If they don't know now that the U.S. betrays people anytime they don't need them anymore or their greater priorities come up, they sure ought to know it now. The Kurds made a mistake going along with what the U.S. decided to do for them. They should have allied with Syria at the beginning. They could have struck a decent deal to serve their interests. Nobody gets exactly what they want, but they could have gotten plenty. They wouldn't need to worry about fighting against any force in the north. And they're certainly not fighting ISIS because the U.S. supports ISIS. So I don't know who these ISIS prisoners are. They're probably on U.S. bases being trained to be redeployed elsewhere to fight more battles for the U.S. But the Kurds right now, I imagine they're thinking about joining forces with Syria to combat Turkey if it comes to this. But even Syria wants Turkish and U.S. forces out of their territory. But I don't think Syria wants a war with Turkey. They've got their hands full in Idlib province fighting maybe tens of thousands of U.S.-supported terrorists. They don't want a war with Turkey on top of that.
Brilliant stuff, Stephen. We've got to talk about the impeachment. StephenLendman.org, by the way, folks. I know many of our listeners, they've known about Stephen even before I ever met Stephen years ago. But do check out StephenLendman.org. It's a terrific website. It's very, very simple, very easy to use, user-friendly articles every day about these issues. And you're getting facts. And the information is sourced, and it's his articles are full of references to back up what it is he's saying, and it's not information you're getting in your national newspaper, so you've got to check out StephenLendman.org. This impeachment inquiry by the Democrats and, you know, surrounding this alleged phone call, well, it's not an alleged phone call. He did phone the Ukrainian Prime Minister, or President, in fact, and he asked about Mike Pence's son. No, he didn't. What's wrong? Joe Biden, what's wrong with me today? He asked about Joe Biden's son, and he asked about Joe Biden, and he solicited help from the Ukrainian authorities to discredit Joe Biden. Did he or didn't he? The Democrats are up in arms. They're saying that this is direct influence in the US election by a foreign power. What's going on, Stephen? Is this going to go anywhere, this story?
I really doubt it, Richie. As much as I detest Trump, I've written volumes about the horrors that he's committed. What's going on is why I call the Dems, I never call them Democrats because there's nothing democratic about them. I call them undemocratic Dems or just Dems. But I mean, this is just more hard evidence of exactly how deeply corrupt they really are. Trump did nothing. Every other U.S. president, at least in modern memory, hasn't done a number of times in dealings with foreign nations. I remember Lyndon Johnson once face-to-face with a Central American president. I forget who it was, but the Central American president made some very reasonable demands excuse me, to Johnson. And Johnson, I think after the conversation, turned to one of his aides and said, "Who the hell does this guy think he is talking this way to the U.S. president?"
Yeah.
U.S. president makes the demands, not a foreign leader. Lyndon Johnson was a very tough customer to come up with. I guess I'd love to have heard some of his conversations with foreign leaders. Every other word was a cuss word.
Yeah.
And the kind of stuff you can't put in print, but that's the way he operated. But Trump, whatever he did, whether it was illegal, immoral, anything else you want to call it, he did nothing more than all the others do. Joe Biden committed a grievous offense. He blackmailed President Poroshenko, Zelensky's predecessor of Ukraine, to call off the dogs against his son Hunter, who were dealing with a corrupt Ukrainian gas company. And he demanded that the chief prosecutor in Ukraine be sacked. And he was withholding $1 billion in U.S. aid for Ukraine unless Poroshenko did this. And of course, he did it. And the chief prosecutor blew the whistle by reporting exactly what happened. Biden is the one that the establishment should go after, not Trump. But as much as I dislike Trump, Richie, the impeachment inquiry is a scam. Russiagate was a scam. Ukraine gate is a scam. It should really be called Schiff gate or Biden gate or Schiff Biden gate.
Fair enough. I can't, like yourself, I don't have any time for any of them. It's what sets your writing apart. You don't have any time for any. Do you get tired of it, by the way? When I say do you get tired of it, I don't mean the whole theatrical production that we watch every day. But do you get tired, Stephen, when you criticise Trump, for example, in your articles? And your articles they're written professionally. And they're written moderately. And they're written matter-of-factly. Without much, you know, there's no real vitriol in there. You're writing it, you're calling it as you see it, and you're referencing everything as a really good journalist does, or should do. And you write something about Trump, something you comment on something Trump is doing, and you immediately get, you must be a Clinton fan then. Does this drive you mad, this nonsense? Because you've had to put up with this for years. And it's the same, of course, if you get stuck into the Clintons. The commentary is from readers or from listeners to Press TV or RTV, the commentaries, oh, you must be a Trump fan then. You know this whataboutery, it's kind of stupid, isn't it? What is it with people? We've never been more tribal than we are now.
Well, I've never been a Trump fan or a Clinton
no.
fan. Or a GOP fan or an undemocratic Dem fan. And listeners need to understand that the U.S. is a one-party state. It's not a two-party state. There are independent parties, but they don't count because they don't get into Congress. And even occasionally, one of their ranks did make it into Congress. They would be no different than a potted plant with no power at all, just like the four congresswomen, the squad. Whatever they say that's good, whatever they believe in, they have no power, so they don't matter. Cynthia McKinney had no power. So she didn't matter in Congress. But the U.S., a one-party state, the U.S. party, I call the war party. Gore Vidal called it the U.S. one-party state, either the money party or the property party. With two right, so it's a one-party state with two right wings, and I deplore them all. Long ago, I wrote an article called The Clinton Crime Family.
Yeah.
We go all of the crimes of what I call the Clinton co-presidency, which is really what it was.
I use that term, by the way, the Clinton crime family, and I should give you credit for it because it's your kind of phrase. I often use it to talk when the Clintons come up, you know. So it's unlikely to succeed this. Just before we part company today, and thanks again for your time today.
Can I mention one thing?
Anything you want. Go ahead, Stephen.
I didn't coin the phrase. Bill Clinton coined the phrase. He cloned it right away in his first term when he was running for office. He said, elect one and get two for the price of one.
Did he really? Is that true? Isn't that incredible? Well, you're very honest, but I remember reading your piece and that phrase kind of stuck in my mind about the Clintons. We're about, I suppose, 12 and a half months or thereabouts till the election next year. If Trump isn't brought down by a sex scandal even between now and then, he's not going to be impeached on the Biden thing, on the Volodymyr Zelensky thing. He's not going to be brought down on that. Does anybody, if it's all fair and above board in terms of if the ballot boxes are not stuffed, you mentioned Lyndon Johnson, the first thing I thought was the legendary ballot box stuffer himself, Lyndon Johnson. So if the election is fair, right, which he was before, long before he became president, if the election is fair, Trump wins by a landslide, doesn't he?
Well, it's a long time between now and November 2020, Richie, so anything can happen between now and then. We simply don't know. I mean, in politics, a few weeks could be a lifetime, so we'll have to see the way things turn out. Trump is most vulnerable on a couple of things. If he makes a mistake and can legally obstruct justice, then it could be curtains for him. And he's a notorious serial liar. If he lies his way into trouble, that could be big trouble for him. But if he leans on his handler and follows the way they instruct him to operate, he should come out of this clean, and the whole ugly business could benefit him, and he could be reelected in November 2020.
He might be, and nothing will change. Some of his tweets today, just before we go, have been very, very funny. One of them, very self-aggrandizing tweet about what an amazing negotiator and operator he is. It's hilarious. We've never seen anything like it. I think this whole diplomacy by Twitter thing is part of some deep, deep state agenda to re-engage people with the political process at a time maybe when people were getting fed up of it and realizing what a sham it is. They've given us this guy and people have never been more engaged. Final word to you. Am I talking through my backside or do I have a point?
Oh, no. I'm just very concerned with everything going on in the U.S., whether it's domestically or abroad, the big geopolitical issues. And I write about them all the time. I write about the wretched state of what I call the establishment media, especially in the U.S., but European, just about as bad, maybe slightly better, but not a heck of a lot better. And my favorite target, the New York Times. I know they know me very well, Richie, because I rip them up one side and down the other repeatedly. The way I like to do it when I criticize somebody is say what they say and then fact-checking them, putting down what I believe is the truth and going that way. But it's a very dangerous time. I've used the phrase, today is the most perilous time in world history, and I really believe it is. I mean, anything could happen. We could see another world war erupt, either by accident or design, and we're in the nuclear age now, which wasn't the case in World War II until the very end, but it certainly is the case now. And who knows? Anything could happen because there are crazies in Washington the way there have always been crazies in Washington. And if those guys and women, whatever, get loose, anything is possible. I'm an old guy, but I fear for the young people in America who do not have the opportunities I had. A kid with nothing going for me. I got into two good schools. I had a decent life. And if I was a young kid growing up today, as opposed to when I did grow up, I would have nothing going for me and I could end up a bum. Who knows?
Who knows? Do you know, if the media wasn't owned by five or four corporations and if it didn't exist just to brainwash people into going along with the agenda, you'd be on network news two or three times a week because you're absolutely brilliant, Stephen. You're an amazing commentator. You're verbose, loquacious, fantastic speaker, energetic, engaging. It's a travesty that I know that you do Press TV, you do lots of other independent media programs, but the American people should be hearing you on the nightly news. And the reason they don't is not because of your doing, it's because of the ownership of the media. It's terrible. StephenLendman.org to read more on our friend in Chicago there. We'll speak again soon, Stephen. Thanks so much for your time today, mate. It always means a lot to me when you come on.
Richie, thank you so much. You're very kind. I'm just a guy who cares. That's the way I describe myself.
You always have, my friend. Bye for now. The brilliant Stephen Lendman live from Chicago today on your Richie Allen Show. It is a Tuesday, the 8th of October, 2019. Back with plenty more in a few seconds' time. Some music, some of your comments, and Hayden Hewitt will join us as well to chat about vaping. This is a big story too. Back in a minute.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Right, welcome back to the program. It's coming up for a minute past six. Hayden Hewitt is standing by in North Manchester and will join me in a few minutes, and we'll talk about this vaping story. And we might, if we have time, talk a little bit about the new hateful extremism law. I know Hayden is interested in that as well. And before we do anything else, though, going to take the headlines just in case anything has happened, you know, because I don't know, because we've been talking, you and me, haven't we? We've been talking, and you just don't know what might have happened and what might not have happened, you know, as it were, because lots going on. Now, if you want to get in on the vaping thing, if you'd like me to put something to Hayden, it's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter. If you've got a comment on that, because you might be a vaping user or a vapor. Is that what you say? You might be a vapor. You might not be. You might have been a cigarette smoker. You might have went on to vaping, and vaping might have been very beneficial for you. So do let me know, and I'll read out your comments to Hayden. In the meantime, it's off to FSN. Headlines, the time, 2 minutes past six. It is.
From Feature Story News in London, I'm Ollie Barrett. Angela Merkel's office is declining to comment on reports she told UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson a Brexit deal's unlikely if Northern Ireland leaves the customs union. Turkey says all preparations are completed for a military incursion into northern Syria. The US has blacklisted 28 Chinese organisations over claims of involvement in alleged abuse of China's Uyghur minority, and the EU's new foreign affairs chief is vowing to make the Balkans a key priority.
Thanks, Ollie. You are with Richie Allen, with the Richie Allen Show, even live right now on Fab Radio 2 here in Manchester, Greater Manchester. I'm in Salford, of course, gearing up for Salford versus St. Helens this Saturday at Manchester United's Old Trafford Stadium. Super League Grand Final, can't wait for that. I can't wait, I tells you. More on that later in the week. Hi to Sutty's Rehab. Hi to Busy. Hi to Joseph Mann. Hi to Natalie Stacey. Hi to everybody who's tweeting, to Liz Jones there, to Cartoon Drunk, to Chris McGee, to Charlotte in Burnley, to Auds McBot as well, who might or might not be listening to the programme, to Owinga, and to everybody else. If you want to see what people are tweeting me, go to twitter.com, where it says search Twitter, put Richie Allen Show all one word. If you do that and press enter, you'll see what people are tweeting me. Back in a moment with Hayden Hewitt after this.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Right, this is Iron Maiden on the Richie Allen Show. This is a first, I think, for the program. I'm playing this for Hayden Hewitt because he's a big fan. A very big fan. Hayden Hewitt is next. This is Run to the Hill. Yeah. Ha ha. Yes, there aren't too many shows where you'll hear Radiohead and then later on you'll hear Iron Maiden. And he's not even there, Hayden. He'll be with us in about 2 minutes. I was going to give him the big build-up. I think I introduced Hayden about a year ago. He's been on many times, but I introduced him once just after I played Terence Trent D'Arby. He said nothing during the show, such as the professional nature of the man. But later on, He told me he wasn't too happy to be introduced on the back of Terence Trent D'Arby. I'll play anything, me. Whatever is to hand is what I'll play. Just before he comes on, a number of you have already been tweeting about vaping. You see, the reason we're talking about this is everywhere. Well, today anyway. Today the media was awash with stories about vaping. But it isn't just today. It's been going on for a few weeks now. Stories have been emerging that vaping, when did we first get e-cigarettes? When? 10 years ago, was it? 12 years ago? You mean you didn't do any research, Richie? Well, I remember them when we went to Spain in the mid-2000s. 2005. Late 2004, early 2005. When we went to Spain. That's when I began to see people in offices using these small, thin devices that gave off vapour, condensation. And, you know, they had little batteries in them. I was asking people, because I never smoked anything, ever. Not even a joint, ever. Really, honestly. Cannabis cookies once or twice, many, many, many moons ago. I took a bit of acid once, many, many, many moons ago. Didn't suit me. I didn't do well on it, so I didn't. Might have mentioned before. But I stayed away from things. And I was intrigued by these. And I was told by the vaporizer users in the mid-2000s. And Jesus, Richie! In the mid-2000s in Spain, what are you doing with that thing there? And they would say, well, I used to smoke very heavily. I'm not smoking anymore. I'm using this, they would say. They would say, I'm not smoking anymore. I'm using this. And it's a great thing. It's helping me to get off cigarettes, because cigarettes are full of carcinogens. And I've never understood that, why tobacco in paper had to be filled with chemicals and carcinogens. But anyway, so I thought at the time in the mid-2000s, yeah, vaping, yeah, what a good idea that is. And it has been claimed that vaping and e-cigarettes has helped people in their millions, if not even more, hundreds of millions, to get off cigarettes. But in recent weeks, and today it kind of reached a crescendo. A story on Sky News about a young girl in the UK whose lungs collapsed because of vaping. Stories in the United States about banning flavoured vaping products. You know, the little canisters that you use in the vaporizer, and it might taste of cherry or raspberry or whatever. A number of you have been tweeting about this. You're very unhappy about it. Michigan seems to be taking the lead. They're going to ban outright retailers from selling these products, or at least the flavoured products, in the next couple of weeks. And a lot of people who use e-cigarettes or vaporizers, however you want to categorise them, whatever term you want to use, a lot of people are very annoyed by this. And they're talking about big tobacco companies, and they're talking about governments making decisions that they shouldn't be making. Hayden Hewitt, of course, is no stranger to you. He's the co-founder of one of the world's biggest and most important websites, which is LiveLeak.com. He can be seen these days pretty much daily or every second day making programs for TriggerWarning.tv. It's YouTube.com/TriggerWarning. He makes excellent programs, basically commenting on geopolitical events, on domestic politics, and on human interest stories. He's often joined by Graham Booz, who makes his own programs there as well. I think they're excellent programs, and I do recommend you watch them. I know many of you do. Anyway, Hayden Hewitt, I can't believe it. I played Iron Maiden, and you weren't there.
I know. Imagine that.
Imagine that. Because I remember the piss ripped right out of me for introducing you about a year and a half ago, and you've been back since, but a bit of Terence Trent D'Arby wishing well about a year and a half ago. It emasculated you. It emasculated you. Anyway, enough of the giggling. How are you, by the way?
I'm not so bad, fella. How are you?
I'm 100% well, and this is a massive story. Let's not try and oversell it, but this is huge. You've been across it. You are the first to admit, not admit, but you say, look, you are a vaporizer user. You have been an enthusiast. You have promoted. You haven't promoted any companies or any individual companies, but you have promoted using it as a way to ease off the old cigarettes. You've been looking at this carefully. Over to you. What is going on?
Well, the first thing is that you know, look at the cold, hard facts, because there's a lot of noise going around at the moment. The fact is, some 21 people have died in the USA, and there have been over 1,000 lung injury cases. Those are facts. However, it's being referred to as a vaping related. This is like saying, if let's say there was a bad batch of heroin going around, okay, and that killed 21 people, not unheard of. We don't report it in the newspapers as linked to injecting. We called it linked to heroin. What has happened is in almost, I think 90% of cases has been verified that these injuries and deaths are linked to vaping illicit THC cartridges, which is, you know, for the dual type pens and small devices, it's a pre-filled cartridge that you pop in there and you vape and you get high. But they're full of things like vitamin E, acetate, which turns into like an oil-like substance in the lungs. You don't want oil in your lungs for the obvious reasons. Now, out of those 90%, the remaining 10%, I would put money on the fact a lot of this is young people not wanting to tell their parents they've been taking drugs. Okay, because who would? And if they're going, it's vaping, you go, yeah, it's vaping. So that's what we're seeing. Yet there's been a move to ban flavored e-liquids, and there is not a verified case of flavored e-liquid freely available in stores, not about homebrew or anything like that, causing an injury or death. Not one. Not one. Yet we're seeing massive attacks in the press with any mentions of THC set way down in the article. You know, like fifth, sixth paragraph where most people never get to? That's where they are. The rest is vaping. It's vaping. Now, in the UK, it was resisted for quite a while until Sky really and the Independent, unsurprisingly, are climbing on here. But what I wanted to know was why is this massive attack? I mean, 21 people shouldn't be dead. But to put it into some kind of context, in the US alone, each year 480,000 people die from smoking related diseases. 480,000, almost 500,000 people. But we've not banned cigarettes. Now, they'll say it's the youth epidemic. Now, I don't think kids should be using anything. But if I had to see a kid vaping or a kid smoking, I'd think they've got a better chance through life if you find them vaping. Cigarettes are insidious. They're incredibly Moorish and they're absolutely delicious. And they're very easy to get hooked on. Remember, I was very good at smoking. I took pride in my ability to smoke. But what got me was why this massive furore and this massive ban predominantly starting in the States? And everyone's been screaming it's big tobacco, it's big pharma, but I did a little digging. And whilst I don't doubt the influence, particularly of big pharma and big tobacco, there is something interesting in the United States, very interesting. And it's called the Tobacco Master Settlement Agreement, the MSA. Now, in 1998, some 46 states reached an agreement with the big four tobacco companies like Philip Morris and some others to recover the Medicaid costs of treating people with tobacco-related illnesses. That was $206 billion was the settlement over 25 years. So if we split that up to 46 states, that comes to roughly just a little under $4.5 billion per state. Over 25 years, that's $180 million a year. Not chump change.
No.
Now, what happens is, this is where the problem comes, though. This yearly handout is dependent on sales because there's a per cigarette way of working it out. The states will set their budget at the beginning of the year and essentially spend it like all councils and states do. And they will include the full sum. But because of vaping, even though it's still not as popular as smoking, it's making a large dent in tobacco sales. A very large dent. It's proved to be one of the most successful cessation devices because big pharma have many products that almost help you quit.
They do, but not quite.
Exactly. So it keeps you on the gravy train because it's better if you're a customer forever. So the states are noticing a massive loss of revenue. Now, these 21 kids have died predominantly from vaping THC liquids. Now, I can't discount the fact there might be some teenager out there that's predisposed to having lungs like whoopee cushions, you know, yeah, they vape, yeah. Dissolve. Yeah. There's people that drop dead after taking an aspirin. These things regrettably do happen. But I always follow the money. And I see they're losing money. And they don't want to lose money. Because they've got this, not only the taxation from cigarette sales, which is huge, but also this master settlement agreement.
And the spin-off industry, which is Big Pharma, not quite treating smoking addiction, but also Big Pharma makes a lot of money when people develop serious pulmonary conditions and lung conditions because of their addiction to cigarettes, cancers and everything else.
Why else would cigarettes still be legal? I speak as a long-time smoker.
Yeah.
It was my choice, but I had to stop because it was having detrimental effects on my health. Since switching to vaping, I did fall off the wagon for a while, but that happens. You know, with regular checkups of the doctors, my lungs were cleared. You know, the blood pressure was right. Everything was looking good on vaping. Now, I'm not saying vaping's safe. Nothing's safe.
That was my next question. We'll get to that in a minute. We'll get to the risks of vaping in a second. And thanks for saying that, because there will be listeners now screaming, going, come on, right? It might be better than smoking. And Hayden is bang on about the big pharma and the big tobacco companies. But are we just going to ignore that you're still inhaling materials into it? We'll definitely come to that. But we will in a minute. But the track you're on now is very interesting.
Just one second.
Yeah, go ahead, yeah. Hayden Hewitt is our guest, by the way. Triggerwarning.tv is where you'll find Hayden. You'll find him on youtube.com/triggerwarning. And I've got to mention Alex Doust for his employment prospects. Alex Doust, he never gets a mention when Trigger Warning gets mentioned. I didn't know anything about Alex apart from...
Alex. Young Alex is an essential part of the team.
Good. Well, I only know Alex from Twitter and when he comments on issues and stuff like that. I didn't know he was a part of the team, but he's gotten a mention now anyway.
He's
there you go.
He's coming down for Meat Space as well, so that'd be
good stuff. And I want to talk about that as well in a few minutes.
Yeah, I mean, with vaping, no one's ever claimed that it's absolutely safe. And who knows? But it is far less harmful. The Royal College of Physicians threw out a figure that it's 95% less harmful. Now, we all have things that we're weak with. I clearly have an addictive personality. I can't just quit. However, I can vape.
Hang on a second. I've got Peter Hitchens on the line. Peter Hitchens says, addictive personality, fuck off, Hewitt. I just love whenever anybody talks about addiction. And of course, I totally believe in addiction. I've had issues with alcohol. I've not been a roaring drunk, but I've had issues not drinking. You know, after work, I've had issues just not having a drink. But every time anybody talks about addiction, Peter Hitchens jumps in and says it's bullshit. It isn't bullshit. It's serious. Cigarettes are highly addictive. Go on.
Those who don't have addictions.
Absolutely.
Sadly, it appears he's addicted to being...
a dickhead.
Oh, no, that counts, basically, I wasn't going to say it on your show, would I? A dreadful bore. That's my addiction. And I know that if I vape, I don't smoke. It makes it much easier not to smoke. And my health improves as a result. So I'm weighing up the risk. If I continue to smoke, I'm guaranteed something terrible. Guaranteed. Whether it be a cancer, whether it be, you know, circulatory illness, whatever. I'm guaranteed something. It's very rare. You know, everyone says, oh, you see those 110-year-old French women smoking two packs a day. Yeah, how many do you see?
Exactly. Because emphysema is one of the most terrifying things that any human being could ever look forward
drowning
to.
Drowning in your own lungs.
Yeah,
How many Keith Richards are there? You know, but how many people have died trying to do that? So, no. I accept that smoking will kill me young, and I've got a son. I want to see him grow up. So this, to me, gets me off the worst. Now, people are saying we've no long-term results. We've had vaping for well over a decade now. That's not long-term. But how long are we supposed to... how do we know? We won't know. But the way I see it, if it's 95% less harmful than smoking...
It's a good thing. Listen, I think it's a good thing. Could you ever see yourself, before we get back into the details of this, could you ever see yourself ditching the vaping? Is that something that you think about? Or is it just common sense now, leave it now, because at the moment I'm not smoking, which is great, thank God you're not. But what about the future?
I'll do what I'm doing for now. I you know me, Richie, I very rarely plan that far ahead.
Yeah.
It's, you know, for now, I'm on a decent path. I, you know, it's only a small subsection of vapors, to be honest, 10%. Yeah, I've got quite an enthusiastic side building my own equipment and things like that, because I find that helps with it. You know, that's part of it for me. Other people just like to plug something into a Juul and go. I like to build coils and faff around and things of that nature. But whatever it takes to get you off the cigarettes, to me, is great. And if nicotine gum does it for you, well, more power to you. Well done. Or cold turkey or whatever. Cold turkey, I'm very unpleasant to be, even more unpleasant to be around than usual. It doesn't work for me.
Neither do the patches. You know, I've known a lot of smokers, and they just, the patches are bullshit as well, aren't they? They don't work, these things. They're not meant to work. They're meant to keep you believing that they work, and you keep going back to the shop and spending outrageous, or the chemist, and spending outrageous amounts of money on them. These things don't work, and vaping obviously does. Were you screaming at the television? I mean, isn't it outrageous for presenters right across the UK's media to be talking about 21 people and nobody, look, we're not virtue signalers here, but of course you sympathise when you hear that youngsters have died. But you said 480,000 in America. Cigarettes are poison. You know, how could you call for a ban on vaping?
Death sentence.
Madness.
Alcohol kills so many people. A lot of things kill people. Yeah, we're banning vaping, which so far banning flavours hasn't apparently killed anybody. We ban drugs. You know, I'm not a drug user. However, we ban marijuana, which doesn't appear to be anywhere near as harmful as drinking. I guess if you smoke it with tobacco, there's issues there. We ban ecstasy, which was proven in its in a purer form is very negligible if used correctly. Obviously, if used too much, it causes problems with the serotonin receptors in the brain and such like, as someone educated me last week. But we seem to ban a lot of things that there's not a lot of money in, because vaping is still a cottage industry. One thing that's really going to damage vaping, in the US, we're already seeing family business people being put out of business, you know, shut down. That's it. That's their livelihood gone for nothing, for no good reason.
None whatsoever. Yeah.
But next door, they're still selling cigarettes. In India, I think there's 30 or 40 million vapors. They've been told it's now illegal.
Now, funny you mention India. Sorry to interrupt you, Hayden. Funny you mention India, because in the subcontinent, you do have a higher rate of younger smokers. It's a bizarre thing. Isn't it? Because we've...
100 million in India.
And young as well. Young kids.
Something like that. But what it is in India, there was some 30, 40 million vapors. That's a big market. The Chinese, I think, is it Shenzhen? Schengen, yeah, something like that. Shenzhen, is where a lot of the companies are that produce the mass market vaping equipment.
So why haven't the big tobacco companies said, all right, because they've got the power to put these people out of business by simply replicating their products and marketing them themselves. You and I talked about this a few years ago privately.
That takes completely revamping everything they do. Some have invested heavily into vaping. Some big tobacco companies, Philip Morris, I actually put a press release saying that that's pretty much the future. However, this is what gets this. There's not a market in the US or the UK to sustain the level of industry in China. However, 30 to 40 million vapors in India, very nice. But now that's illegal. Can't import any new vaping equipment into India. You can use what you've got till it's finished.
This is a powerful lobby. Let me read a few tweets because we'll... I'll be criticised if we don't. Lots of tweets here. We are going to talk about meat space as well. Cartoon Drunk says a pack of 20 Marlboro or Winston in most of Southeast Asia will set you back about 60 pence a pack. I didn't know that, if that's true. I believe, I've never smoked, but I believe Marlboro, which you buy in 20s, is about 11 or 12 quid here, is it 13?
I think they're around 11, 12 pounds.
Jesus, that's a lot of money, that. And a lot of that is government revenue, isn't it?
Yeah, you know? Of course it is.
Yeah. Charlie Tweet said, the patches helped him with the nicotine side of things, but it's the habit that is the hardest to kick. I gave up 10 years ago and I still fancy cigarettes now, he says. Very honest. I tried again several times, but it makes me feel sick, so I've given up trying to start smoking again, he says, and he laughs. Susan says she liked the ritual of rolling. So vaping covers the need to fiddle before you have the carrot you were waiting for all day, she says.
That's a big part of it for me. They're making coils, they're preparing your atomizers, you know, using the juice. And it's a ritual.
That's very interesting, that. That is very interesting. I wouldn't have considered that, obviously. Man Bear Pig says the analysis from Hayden even is absolutely spot on. He says there's huge amount of interest. There's Alex of Trigger Warning says, so you ban the flavours and you pull the wings off the fly. Millions of vaping shops...
Do you know which flavours aren't banned, Richie? Sorry.
No, go ahead. Yeah, go on.
What flavour you are allowed to have?
I'm all ears. I have no idea.
Tobacco flavour.
Oh, tobacco. Oh, Jesus.
Can't have cheesecake.
You can't have cheesecake flavour, cherry, but you can have tobacco flavour. This is really important. Hayden Hewitt from LiveLeak.com and Trigger Warning is on the line from North Manchester talking about what is a massive story. The all-out attack by the media, it must be said, by tobacco companies as well, although it's not the full story Hayden has been explaining, and also pharmaceutical companies on vaping and the re-characterisation of vaping products as potentially dangerous and fatal. They're using the story of 21 younger people who have allegedly died because of their usage of vaporizers, atomizers. Very important, this. Who's behind it? Hayden's been talking about this. To go back to Alex's comment, he says, ban the flavors, you pull the wings off the fly. Millions of vaping shops will go under. Millions of people will go back to smoking because they can't get any cherry limeade liquid, says Alex there. There are so many comments on it. Go to twitter.com, Richie Allen Show in Twitter, all one word. You'll see what people are tweeting me. Yeah, you want to come back on any of those comments?
Well, we're watching huge media manipulation. We're seeing the headline culture in action. I have arguments daily. Every, like the popcorn lung myth pops up. Popcorn lung basically was linked to a chemical called dicetyl, which gives a creamy, buttery flavour to foods and to microwave popcorn. And some people that worked at a popcorn factory over seething vats of this stuff allegedly developed popcorn lung. I forget the proper term. It's dreadful.
It sounds horrible, right? Popcorn lung, I think, holy Jesus. Yeah.
It's a death you wouldn't wish on anybody. However, it's some two people. Somebody else apparently had a fetish for sniffing it.
Jesus.
Allegedly. Got it. But
Hayden, hang on a second. What's popcorn lung? I'm thinking it's polyps inside the lung.
No,
I'm thinking.
I think bronchitis obliteratis or something like that. I'm getting that wrong. It's a huge problem with the lungs breaking down and not being able to absorb oxygen properly and things. So it was linked to dicetyl very, very tenuously. And there was dicetyl in some e-liquids. Now, the industry predominantly self-regulates. People said, we don't want that. They panicked. Most e-liquids killed it off. Some still have a bit in. But I get that thrown at me daily. You're going to get popcorn lung. You're going to get popcorn lung. So some cigarettes have up to 100 times more dicetyl in than a dose of e-liquid. Can anybody, I will give you cash money if you can find me one smoker that died of popcorn lung. There's not one. It's bullshit, but we're being sold it. That's why the headlines say vaping, because people only read headlines. Some guy today started telling me, well, people have died. I said, where's the proof? He said, well, I'm a chemist. I've got years of experience. You trust me? No, I don't. Show me someone that's died from this.
Yeah,
not
before
you. This girl who I don't know what she vaped, but I have a suspicion this girl on Sky News probably wasn't vaping key lime cookie from Element or whatever, you know? Just a suspicion.
Yeah, and you're not going to get the full story from these companies either. Natalie says...
Maybe she's got shit lungs.
That could be it too. Sorry, guys, says Natalie. I rolled a cigarette. I tried vape, but it killed my lungs for a few days. I couldn't transition. Might try it again. William tweets that he likes the tobacco flavour himself, so he's fine. Selfish bastard. William. I like William. Steve says, I was in a supermarket recently. A woman in front of me bought 6 packets of cigarettes, 80 quid. I can't understand that, you see. How can anybody afford it? Mark Best tweets, tobacco companies targeted third world countries. They damn right did, Mark. Of course they did. And they thrive. They thrive in developing economies, and they thrive in sub-Saharan Africa. Of course they do. The bastards. Yeah, and they get away with it. Where you can buy cigarettes for less than a pound. I tell you what, Hayden, even when we moved to Spain in the mid-2000s, you could go to a machine, because it's all these machines in Spain, and you could buy a pack for €4. And this is in the mid-2000s when they were like 8-9 quid here.
Well, everyone used to say here when they get to £5, because when I started smoking, it was about £1.20 for 20, something like that. But when it gets to £3, I'm not going to quit.
Yeah,
when it gets to
£5,
it's death of 1,000 cuts. You know, now it's like £12 What's that? When it gets to £20.
That's it. I'm going to stop once and for all, and they won't
I'm
either.
Still gonna be addicted.
Let me ask you this. Will the industry to use the terminology, fight back. Will, you said it's the cottage industry. Will they fight back and say, look, come on here, you know?
I don't think it's terribly effective yet. Not until, some of the bigger manufacturers get on board and support it. At the minute, they can't possibly match the lobbying power of Big Pharma.
I mean, there's got to be court cases here. The producers of the vaping products have got to get before a congressional committee.
There are some big vaping advocates that are trying to pull things together. Some guys on YouTube, reviewers, with millions of followers. Smart guys that are trying to pull everyone together. But like everything, people are like, it's like herding cats. Getting anybody together on one issue is incredibly difficult, even when it's shared interest. But some are really trying very, very hard. But they're up against governments and lobbies. And
the media.
The media are just helping. Just inordinately. It's ridiculous. It's terrifying. Because when you do know the ins, outs, backs of an argument, and you can look at evidence, and then you can still point at the media going, you're lying.
Yeah,
this isn't me supposing. This is here. Here's the evidence. Here, you're lying. You lying bastards. But nobody cares because everyone jumps on board. It's how they ban things. It's how it works. It's nudge. It's nudge theory, isn't it?
It is indeed. Let me just remind our listeners, Hayden, because I do want to talk counter extremism with you. I want to remind our listeners what we've been talking about. Hayden Hewitt from LiveLeak.com, one of the biggest and most important websites in the world. The Trigger Warning team, go to youtube.com/Trigger Warning to watch political commentary, domestic, global politics, but also funny and very pithy and funny and humorous commentary on human interest stories as well. And we're going to talk as well about Meat Space, which is happening in a couple of weeks' time in Manchester. Hayden's been talking about...
Got to get tea as well.
Oh, yeah. Tea
is nearly ready.
Your team.
And as much as I like you and adore your listeners, you're not going to come between me and my dinner.
No, I definitely am not.
Nothing comes between me and my dinner.
Or mine either. So I would be a hypocrite to get in your way. Now, we've talked about the influences behind this attack on vaping. If you missed any of it, if you just come in, you've got to hear it. Check it out. Briefly then, because you've got to run, and I understand that. Sara Khan, the counter-extremism commissioner, published a report yesterday, got lost in the Brexit nonsense, in the climate change story, got lost in all of that. Very scary, though. I mean, it's beyond scary, and we don't do fear porn. We've come up with a new category. It's called hateful extremism. It's got to be wiped out, and effectively it's people saying things online that we believe might incite others to cause harm, even if those quotes did not actually say you should go out and give a kicking to a Jew or a kicking to a Muslim or a kicking to an Irishman. This is scary stuff, Hayden.
It's terrifying where this is going, and then they're attacking encryption constantly. It's like, I like having private conversations, not because I'm planning terror attacks or anything. Like, do you know what, Richie? I just like having private conversations.
Yeah, me too.
I think if I have a chat with you on WhatsApp or whatever, that's between me and you. I don't want to share with them. No, there's, the government, if they knocked on my door and asked, I'd show them. There's nothing to see. But there's this constant attack on free speech, on any kind of speech. And they're bringing the internet to heel. It's been going on for a long time. There's enormous pressure on site owners now to comply. I'm seeing things on LiveLeak I personally don't agree with, but LiveLeak's got no choice. And it's just how it is. It's just the way it is, because everyone's too busy screaming, but my rights, but my rights, but no one will ever get together and support anybody else on this. It's just like, screw you, give me my freedom, I demand it. Well, what are you going to do to help us? Nothing.
Nothing.
Well, I'm sorry then. When it's gone, blame me.
Look, I know, do you know what, we'll leave that there and we'll talk about Meatspace. I'll tell you why we'll leave that there, because it's a bigger issue, and yes, I'm sure we'll talk about it. At Meatspace, I'm sure it'll come up. I'm sure it'll come up when you come back onto this programme. Before you go, and thanks for your time today, this vaping story is big and will run. Meatspace is a trigger warning event that's happening in Manchester on November 2nd. What is it, and how can people go to it?
It's our first live event. Basically, we started talking about it last year, and it was actually me that put it off, because I didn't think anyone would come to see us. But Graham was adamant, so I went, all right, we'll try it. Basically, it's Saturday, November the 2nd, although if you are coming to Manchester on the Friday, we're all going to meet up for some drinks on Friday night. Just a casual, hey, get to know everybody, yeah? Get to know everybody. Network. But on the Saturday, It's a full evening planned of, you know, we are going to have trigger warning shows. We're going to have rants from myself, from Graham. It's going to be a debate with yourself and Graham as our esteemed guest, Mr. The Richie Allen. We're going to try and get Crip Daddy on, a hilarious guy from the States, to do a bit as well. But the important thing is it's not all going to be streamed, because we need an actual safe space, by which I mean nobody's protected from having their feelings hurt, but where we can all speak openly without fear of some dreadful, crusty SJW trying to destroy our entire lives for it.
Yeah.
Okay? And this is hugely important to me. So at one point, we're going to say, right, cameras are off, everyone phones off, or put them in a box over there. This is us. So there's only 30 tickets gone on the first one. We've only got 11 left. So if you would like to join us, they're only £10, and it all goes back into the project. You can go to gearpress.co.uk, and right on the front page, you can click on the what looks like, well, it's basically a meat grinder. Click on that. You can buy your ticket there. We're setting up. Everyone gets an email with a link to a Telegraph group where we're going to keep in touch with everyone so we can let everyone know where we're going to be, how it's happening, you know, how we're going to get everyone to get some transport to the studio, which is about 3/4 of a mile outside the city centre. And it's going to be an evening of stuff that will upset a lot of people. You will see and hear things that will upset you. You will see and hear things you do not like. But isn't that fine?
Absolutely fine.
Just fine. And of course that's what this is going to be. And if it works, we'll roll it out to the next one and try and do it bigger and just create places where people can exchange ideas and have fun and not worry about finding out they've been cancelled.
Yeah, cancelled, yeah. Cancel culture. Their employers have been urged to dismiss them. November 2nd, that's the Saturday. There's a meet on the Friday before that. I'll definitely be at that for a couple of drinks. What's the website address again, Hayden?
If you go to gearpress.co.uk, there's the meet space tickets are right on the front page there. But you can also go to Trigger Warning TV, and there's an article there and more information. And I'm just really hoping it's going to be a great evening. We're going to have a lot of fun. It's going to be quite outrageous. There's going to be lots of great debates, and everyone will get a chance to have their say. And then we'll all go home.
Sounds like the plan to me, mate. I'm looking forward to it, and I'm genuinely thrilled to be invited to it. I can't wait for it. So.
I'm glad you're going to come, you know, because also it shows it's good for the diversity, having, you know...
A crazy conspiracy theorist, yeah. Absolutely right. You've got to have one.
You've got to have a touch of Irish. You've got to
have a touch of Irish, particularly in North Manchester. Well, look, thanks for the vaping thing. We'll definitely be talking about that again in the near future, because that's a huge story, that the implications, of course, are bigger than maybe most people listening maybe understand. So I really appreciate that. Liveleak.com for information about geopolitical events that you do not get anywhere else. Triggerwarning.tv and YouTube.com/triggerwarning.
Trigger Warning TV on YouTube.
Just look for Trigger Warning TV, on you, and you'll find there's no other one.
You get some dreadful Netflix TV show.
That's not you, no. Mate, thanks. Go and enjoy your tea. Thanks for your help today.
Thanks for having me, Richie. Always a pleasure.
Brilliant, mate. The great Hayden Hewitt live on the line from his home in North Manchester on a Tuesday's Richie Allen Show. The time is exactly... It is 19 or 18 and a half minutes before the top of the hour. I've not got a tune lined up. I should have a tune lined up, because I wanted to play a tune, and then I wanted to come back and have a chat with you about something. But in the meantime, we can just have a listen to this, and I'll come back and have a chat with you about something else.
Renowned healer Mark Byerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Byerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbyerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House,
a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Welcome back to the most listened to independent radio show in Europe. It's your Richie Allen Show.
Yeah, Moinga tweets he was never into smoking, thank God, because it looks expensive as hell. It is outrageously expensive in this country. It really is. You know, it isn't elsewhere in the world, but here, and I know in the US it's expensive. It used to be much cheaper in the US, but the government taxation is huge. Let me just finish up with this today. It's kind of like a thought for the day. By the way, Charlie, apologies for misgendering you. I misgendered Charlie. Charlie is a female Charlie. Look, this morning on the YouTube live stream, which is a bit of nonsense, really, I talked about next year, and I talked about maybe not being around in terms of that I might not be broadcasting next year. I might move on from it because there are a number of things. This morning I talked about my falling out of love a little bit with it, you know, because it's a different challenge these days to produce the radio program than it once was. You know, in terms of scheduling the program, in terms of producing it and filling it with people talking to one another about the issues, it used to be a program that had more debates on it than it does these days. And I talked this morning about the various reasons that it has become difficult to get people to speak on programs like this, meaning that it's more difficult to alert a newer or a wider audience to the program's existence than it used to be. I used to attract people to the programme who never had any interest in conspiracy research. And I did that by getting what we called system people or mainstream people to come on the programme to either debate me or to debate somebody else. And that's become impossible because of the way the world is these days. The way that voices who are very polarised are amplified. And shows like mine, and there aren't very many shows like mine, but shows like mine who are neither right-wing or left-wing, but try to highlight how ridiculous the whole left-right thing is. Shows like mine have become characterised as, ironically, the extremist programmes, even though there isn't anything extremist about my programme. And the reason that is because, you know, the programme is a good programme. You know, it's produced by a professional journalist. It sounds good. It is produced well. It sits well in its market, right? And it attracts people to it. And it's been, you know, designated. Now, I don't care the fact that it's been designated as a no-go area. I don't care that Zionists, for example, and others have been saying you shouldn't ever speak on this programme. The Board of Deputies of British Jews have said nobody should talk on this programme. I don't give a shit about that. That's just one thing, but it's made it difficult for me to enjoy the programme. I enjoy when I've got academic folks on who don't agree with geoengineering, who don't agree with false flag terrorism. I enjoy that. But I can't do so much of that anymore. And I'm somebody who's got to be challenged. And, you know, I was thinking this morning, after 5 years, you know, maybe next year I might go and do something different. And a number of you got a little bit alarmed. Not many, it must be said, but I had a few emails. You know, oh, Richie. And then some of you got it into your minds that I would charge for the programme. Listen, I said 1,000 times, I'll say it again. And when have I ever not, you know, honoured my word? I will never charge anybody to hear the Richie Allen radio show. Never. It isn't well-funded, the programme. And it hasn't been well-funded for a long time. And obviously the YouTube censorship and the deletion of my first YouTube channel has made it very difficult for me to fund the programme. And you know this, because I tell you once in a blue moon. I don't tell you very often, because I don't want to be accused of begging. In fact, I would knock somebody out if I got a chance to, who would accuse me of begging. I don't ask for funding for this programme. But that's a difficulty as well. It's difficult. You know, at the moment, I bring in about £1,700 a month through PayPal and through the bank. That sounds like a lot of money. It isn't. It's a pittance. I know that would be the envy of many independent programmes. They'd love to bring in £1,700 a month. But that equates to a little over £20,000 a year. But I don't get that. it costs me around £9,000 a year to put the program on. So I've been working for the listeners of this program effectively for a little bit over £10,500 a year. And I've been dipping into my own kind of mediocre savings to keep the program going. Now, I have been doing that. And there are people of good standing in the community who will testify to that. You know, some people donate £10 a month, some people donate 20. One or two people donate £50 a month, and one or two people donate £100 a month. And then you've got some people who donate £1 a month, or £2 a month, or £3 a month. And that totals about £1,700 a month. The national minimum wage in the UK is about £15,000 a year. I earn about just over £10,000 a year. That can't go on. That cannot go on. I've got a family. And I have commitments and expectations. So in 2020, I can't do that. It's not just that I'm pissed off with the paradigm and the programme is not challenging me. That is true. When I said that this morning, that is true. But also financially, I can't keep doing it. It's a fact. You know, £1,700 a month. Wow, you're doing really well, Richie. Yeah, but I don't get to keep that. I wish I did. Because, yeah, I could survive on £20,000 a year. You know, I'm working 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, but I'll do it for £20,000 a year if you give it to me. But I'm not getting that. And that's a problem as well. Because more than 99% of people who listen to independent media programmes, more than 99% of people will not donate. They will not contribute. And most of those people can actually afford to, if they could be bothered to. But they just can't be bothered to. So I say, probably for the first time ever, fucking shame on you. Shame on you if you download any radio programme on a daily basis and you use it and it entertains you, but you decide not to support it. If you can afford to and you don't, I say fucking shame on you. I really do mean that. But I'll never put it behind a paywall. Never. Because there are people who listen who haven't got a pot to piss in. And there's no shame on them. You haven't got a pot to piss in, you've got my sympathy. I know that pain. Not today I don't know that pain, but I used to know that pain. It's not a nice place to be. So, looking into 2020, making programmes like this is going to become more difficult anyway because the government has got a lot to say about programmes like mine and whether I should be allowed to operate as I do. It's difficult to get academic folks and politicians to come on the programme for the reasons I just gave because I'm supposed to be, you know, a harbinger of terrorists. You know, I'm supposed to be a promoter of racists, which of course I'm not. That's all very annoying as well. But ultimately the finances are dreadful. That's how it works. To every man and woman who contributes to the £1,700 a month, you've got my undying, never-ending gratitude. Thank you so much. But it's not enough. You make up a tiny percentage of the audience. The vast majority of people who listen do not contribute ever. Not just to me, but they listen to a lot of programmes. They take them for free and they never, ever put their hands in their pocket. They are the first people to criticise and to call you names and call you out and abuse you when you say something that they don't agree with, but they've never put their hands into their pocket. Dreadful. That's the way it is. And I'm not bitter about that. You do not hear any anger in my voice because there is none. This is the way it's always been. It was the same in London. It's the same here. It's been the same for 5 years. 5 years it's been like that. And, you know, we stayed in this city and we took on a mortgage in Salford in order to support this programme. That's true. To reduce our monthly rent so that this programme could continue. That's what we did. That's the sacrifice we made and the future Mrs. Allen made for this radio programme. But the vast majority of people who listen do not and never have contributed. So £1,700 coming in a month, just over £20,000, sounds fantastic. But yeah, I've got to pay to stream it. I've got to pay to podcast host it. I've got to pay phone bills. I've got to pay the exorbitant monthly fees for telecommunications to make the programme work. So I don't get £20,000 a year. I get just over 10, which is about £5,000 less than the national minimum wage. So fuck no, in 2020, I'm not going to continue doing it if that's the way it is. I've done everything to bring in advertising. And, you know, things were okay when the YouTube revenue was coming in. It was okay, I was doing a lot better. But they've obviously closed that avenue off. There is no YouTube revenue now. And that's the way it is. No bitterness, no anger at all. But that's just the way it bloody well is. And we have to have a think about that. And I would ask you, and this is not about me. I swear to God and Sonny Jesus, it's not about me. If you are listening to an independently produced television or radio program and you think the man or woman who makes that is of value, is worthwhile, fucking support them. If you put 50 pence a month into a YouTube, into a PayPal account, just do it. If you put £2 a month into an account, just fucking do it. Just do it. If you can. And like I said 1,000 times before, if you can't do it, ignore what I've just said. Christ, I know that £2 is a lot of money for some people. I know that more and more people a day are going to food banks to feed themselves. I fucking know this better than anybody. Because I know people personally who work but who have to go to food banks. And they are mortified. They are ashamed. And they have nothing to be ashamed of. Nothing to be ashamed of. This is what this fucking system is doing to people. It's starving people. You know? But I've got to look at myself in 2020. And the commitments I have to my family. And I've got to look at maybe doing something else that brings in more money for me. I look for no sympathy. I've never asked for any. I have never complained about this. In 5 years, I never ever come on here and ask for funding. Do I? No, I do not. I sometimes play the little jingle that asks for funding, but I never come on here asking for money. I've been told by Jean-Anne Crowley, by other people, you've got to ask for donations more often, and I never fucking do. Never, because I don't want to be doing that. I've had help from great people whom I've mentioned before. Mark Bayersky, Patricia, Jean-Anne, others, Ruth, I could mention them, and if I haven't mentioned you, I apologise. I really do. Don't think I've forgotten you. I don't want to be doing that. And there are others who made large contributions over the years. Large contributions. And I don't want to name them now because they might not want to be named. But we bring in about 1,700 a month, and it's got to do better than that in the future. It just has to. Because no man can survive on just over 10 grand a year in revenue. And that's all I'm going to say on that. But to answer those questions this morning about paywalls, never. Never in a million years am I going to put it behind a paywall. Don't think that's criticism, by the way, of those who do charge for it. I admire those who charge. Fair play to you. Absolutely right. If you value your output, if you value your production, absolutely damn right. Nobody has any right to criticise you. And I'm no martyr when I say I don't charge. I know that there are people who can't afford it. And they enjoy it. They get a giggle out of it. They like the monologues. They get a crack out of it. I'm not going to deny you the programme just because you can't afford it. But I do say to those who can afford, but who never, ever, ever think about making a contribution, fucking shame on you. Think about it. Just think about it. That's all I'm saying on that matter. And I want to finish on the most important point, which is to everybody who contributes to the revenue of £20,000 plus a year, undying gratitude to you. Thanks so much for that. Because, you know, it wouldn't exist. It wouldn't happen without you. And I mean that. That's the most important thing. Not going out on a negative. To everybody who's ever contributed, I'll never forget you for it. It's amazing. And I think about you all the time. Because we don't have YouTube revenue. I don't have advertising revenue. But there you go, you know. I want to give a big shout out to Simon Stewart, by the way. It did occur to me that on the anniversary of the programme, I mentioned a few people, and I didn't mention Simon, and I fucking punched myself in the face later on for not mentioning Simon. I should have written down names, but I never do that. Simon Stewart is a very good friend of mine, and has been, and will be, a huge help to me and to programmes like this going forward. He used to edit the YouTube channel, an amazing bloke, Simon, in Birmingham, and couldn't have done any of this. And I didn't give Aaron Callan a mention either, and there was no fucking malice in that. It's just one of those bloody things. Another great guy, Aaron Calland. Look, we'll be back tomorrow morning for the newspaper review at the usual time of 9:30. And I'll be back with you tomorrow at 5 on the radio show. Hopefully with, I will be back, hopefully with two more excellent guests. Thanks so much to Hayden Hewitt. And a million thanks, of course, as always, to Stephen Lenman in Chicago. What a bloke. What a man. Let's go out with the Lightning Seeds today. Why not, eh? Why not, I say. This is Lucky You. That's some sort of, it's either a Freudian slip, that, which it might be, or it's written in the stars, because I just dragged that right out of the playlist. See you tomorrow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. Bye.